Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, our conversation will focus back in on fixed income. Glad to welcome back to the podcast Leslie Falconio, head of taxable fixed income strategy for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Leslie, good morning. Thank you for dropping by and for spending some time today with our listeners and our clients.
Thanks for having me.
So, Leslie, very timely that you're joining us today. I know over the past few weeks, fixed income investors have been faced with volatility in rates. In fact, you recently spoke about this in your October 25th blog titled Worth It. I'm curious from what you've been picking up on, Leslie, what are the factors that are driving these moves in rates?
Well, I mean, there's two main factors, but it's not just the move in rates, but it's really more about the velocity of the move in rates. And what I mean by that is, you know, we've moved in 10-year Treasury yields, you know, probably about over 70 basis points since mid-September, and that's like the largest one-month sell-off that we've seen, or the largest, you know, move that we've seen since like the GFC, right, the Great Financial Crisis. So it's really the velocity of the move. That is the focus here. And there's two main reasons for this. The first one is, you know, look, we believed that the Fed was coming in, or the market was coming in projecting the Fed's cuts to be a little bit too aggressive. And we had really taken down our interest rate risk back in early September, you know, thanks having more of a neutral stance, simply because that 250 basis points of cuts that the market was pricing in was a bit aggressive, as the market has a tendency to do. Now, with stronger growth that we've seen, both in the things like the Atlanta Fed GDP Now and retail sales, you know, and the increase in some of these savings projections, you know, part of this move has been due to the fact that, you know, we were not in a, you know, hard landing scenario that the market was pricing in, even though CIO was always in the soft landing camp. But it's also, too, and particularly lately, is volatility surrounding the election. So if I had to say just off the cuff, if we look at, say, the move from 360 to, say, 410, that's probably, you know, due to some of the growth, you know, higher growth expectations that we've, you know, been in the marketplace, and also some of the inflation numbers. But the remaining of this heading into this 430 is really election related. So when you put those two together, you've got a really large spike in the volatility index, which we measure by the move index. And also just, you know, 70 basis points rise in interest rates in about a 3.5 week time period.
So, Leslie, as you and I are speaking today, Tuesday, October 29th, the U.S. election just a week away at this point. So what might be the implications of certain outcome scenarios to fixed income investors?
Look, you know, risk assets have done tremendously well this year. And let's be honest, we're heading into this election, regardless of outcome, at spreads that are, you know, in the 8th percentile, 15th percentile over the past 10, 20 years for corporate type credit, like things like, you know, IG and high yield have been wider than they are today, you know, 90% of the time over the past 20 years. So we're coming into this with the election at very, very tight spreads. Securitized products, things that are more subject or to volatility like agency MBS or the municipal market, you know, is not as rich because they feel this volatility that we're seeing in interest rates. So, you know, first off, we're coming into the election at not a, you know, wide opportunity set in terms of relative value. So when we think about the outcome here, you know, the market has a tendency to, you know, get ahead of itself. We know that the fixed income market's forward looking, and whether it's pricing in too many cuts or pricing in an outcome of the election, which is really as obviously yet to be seen, it does so in such extreme fashion. And that's what we're seeing right now. So when we think about the outcome, like, for example, I mean, we've noted several times, if in fact we do have, you know, a red sweep, then the result will be what we call a bear steepener, meaning that yields rise led by the long end going up. And our outlook has been for a steepener, and it remains a steepener in 2025, more of a bullish stance when yields coming down. But either way, we don't like that back end of the yield curve. And we think the back end will be the underperformer. And that's why we've recommended, you know, accounts go to the 1-5, 3-7, anything that goes around that 4.5 type 5-year duration is where we want to be placed. We don't want to go way out in the back end, because we know we have, if in fact if a red sweep occurs, you have higher deficit, there's concern over inflation due to tariff. And when it comes to things such as, okay, we can loosen regulation, it's therefore it's good for things like financials in the corporate market, as I've mentioned, things are already very tight. So it's not as though they're going to tighten in 30 basis points in that kind of scenario. They'll probably just stay status quo. In the other side, if we have, say, a split government with, a Democratic win for the presidency, you'll probably have what we call this bull steepener. You know, yields will come down. We'll focus back on the Fed cutting. Vol will start to come down. And in that scenario, too, risk assets will do just fine. And we don't think there will be a large widening in risk assets. When we think about how risk assets will perform into the end of the year, and particularly in 2025, you know, we have to really, take a look at if, in fact, there is a resurgence, say, not necessarily growth, but on the inflation front. If there is a resurgence on the inflation front, then what we see is a scenario that we saw in 2023, where a potential rise in interest rates is not because necessarily growth is good and, you know, corporate credit does really well. If it's because of inflation, then actually you'll have spreads widen. And remember, you're starting at a place that's not exactly, exuberant in terms of relative value. You're starting at very tight spreads. So I think that's really what we have to keep in mind. And that's one of the reasons why we like the higher quality as well.
Now, Leslie, outside of the election, which remains ahead of us, we also have coming up a couple of FOMC policy meetings. So a lot out there coming up that could influence market behavior. What are your expectations for fixed income performance through year end?
Look, at the market once again, as it goes through reassessing and repricing, the market's taken out, pretty much a full cut. So meaning that, we have about 38 basis points of cuts priced in for the remainder of 2024. So that means either on the November or the December meeting, there's a high probability that there is a pause. But when we think about how we view fixed income, whether they go 25 or 50 this year really isn't something that I focus on. I don't think it has that much of a driver. I think the main focus is what happens in 2025. And as we've talked about, you've had this incredible move in terms of taking out these price cuts, because now in 2025, they're only pricing in about 75 basis points of cuts. So they haven't pushed them out to later years. Oh, they'll cut in later years. They've completely taken them out. And when that is what I consider more of a hawkish stance, right? They're that neutral, that level of neutral rate that we call, or that terminal rate, which used to be at a 287, is now near like a 360 or 375. So they're really saying, Fed, you're not going to do very much in terms of this cutting cycle. It's going to be very shallow. The economy is very strong. Now, when we think about from now into year end, because, the market is really getting ahead of itself in terms of election outcome or even, impact or what those policies might actually be or be able to be implemented, when we look at this 430 level, could we go to a 450? Of course, we were 475 in April. Is it possible to see that? Yes, of course it is. But we think that when we get these rises, you start to add a little bit each time in terms of, capturing that income. Again, we don't go out to the back end of the curve. We keep it more in the short end. You keep your interest rate risk very light, like we are right now. But now it's not a bad time, in our opinion, to start adding, particularly up to that five-year area, because you lock in such great kind of carry and yield. And we do think that the Fed continues to cut. And as we know, these narratives have not been linear. You go from a soft landing to a hard landing and back and forth and back and forth. And I don't necessarily believe that although everyone's priced in for a soft landing, the risk really is that, the numbers actually start to weaken going forward and that narrative comes back. So I don't think this is a straight line narrative. I think you're going to have this back and forth for a while. And when that happens, it really is a good time to add some interest rate risk, not a lot, when yields rise around that 430, 450 level.
So, Leslie, with that, that's a great place to follow up on positioning. What exactly are you recommending to fixed income investors in the way of allocation at the moment?
Look, there's some sectors, as I'd mentioned, that have not really had the benefit of tremendous compression because they are more interest rate sensitive and they do not like it when interest rate volatility sparks higher, right? Like we've seen in the past month. Those things are like agency MBS, munis, any of those kind of sectors that are really tied to interest rate volatility. that have faced a lot of headwinds these past month, we think are on the cheaper side. We also like things such as investment-grade corporates, which we've had for a while. And listen, we like the corporate side because we still believe in the soft landing. They represent very good income and compounding income that can be generated. We do not consider them a cheap asset class. We're not looking for a lot of spread compression, but that's the kind of sectors that we do. And as we see sort of how this plays out going forward, there's a lot of things that we can diversify with in terms of earning income. But until we get through some of these unknowns in the next couple of weeks, you know, we stay with that higher quality. We stay with, you know, right now neutral interest rate risk, but willing to add in that shorter end part of the yield curve as yields move higher, because we do think in 2025, the Fed cuts, the economy slows, it doesn't, you know, it cools, it doesn't crash, and the market has a tendency to move a little bit sooner than it should.
Leslie, very productive conversation as always. Thank you for the clarity as to what factors out there are driving this volatility we've witnessed within rates, as well as some insights into the election, and of course your guidance when it comes to positioning within fixed income. So thank you again, Leslie, for your time and for joining us today.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate it.
Again, today we have been speaking with Leslie Falconio, head of taxable fixed income strategy for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. I again want to point our listeners and clients to Leslie's recent fixed income blog. Title is Worth It, which was authored on October 25th, is now available for you up on UBS.com/CIO. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit UBS.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit UBS.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investor investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.